Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, voting begins in the European elections this Thursday, with the Netherlands taking to the polls first, followed by us here in Ireland on Friday. So outside of Ireland, how have the campaigns been going and what issues are at play around the EU? Well, we're once again joined by Graeme Finlay, lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. And Suzanne Lynch is with us on the line, associate editor at Politico. And Graeme, we want to look at what's happening in France and Germany first off the bat. So two parties in particular, Marine Le Pen's party in France and the AfD in Germany. So what is going on there and why should we be watching this?
Well, there are a lot of seats at stake, so that's one reason. But also Le Pen in particular, the national rally is well ahead of President Macron's party on 30%. And in Germany, the Alternative for Germany party is also surviving despite a lot of ructions, sticking around 15%. And in both cases, the ruling party could be pushed down to third place with a real loss of influence and sort of prestige.
So it could result then in a split, right, when it comes to the groupings at the in the European Parliament.
That's right. There was a huge conflict which developed between the National Rally and the Alternative for Germany, where one of the, you know, AfD's leading candidate made basically pro-SS remarks about the Nazi era, which conveniently, I think, probably for Marine Le Pen and National Rally, gave them the excuse to expel them basically from the identity and democracy grouping in the European Parliament. Now, it doesn't seem to be hurting the AfD particularly, but it's a sign that I think Marine Le Pen is looking to working with sort of slightly less loose cannon parties like Giorgia Meloni's Fratelli d'Italia and other right-wing parties, some of whom are not in Identity and Democracy.
So not far right then. Is she trying to create a wider support base?
I think she's got it already in France by softening some of the hardline things like a Frexit, right, or some other things about leaving the euro and things like that. She's managed to widen her appeal to people who feel like something's wrong in France. I think she's trying to have some greater influence in the actual future of the parliament, because she sees Giorgia Meloni cozying up to Ursula von der Leyen. She knows that Meloni is very disciplined and is on track to have a real say in the future of the parliament. So she's trying to get her into Identity and Democracy out of conservatives and reformists, right, which Meloni leads.
Well, look, Suzanne, you might tell us more about that relationship then. Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the commission, who is really tied in now with Giorgia Meloni, the Italian prime minister. Explain to us what's been going on there.
Yeah, I suppose the first thing to say is that what's unique about the European system is that when voters go to the polls this weekend, they won't be directly voting for the next head of the European Commission. They'll be voting for the MEPs in the Parliament. But then how those MEPs do and their relative political groups will impact who gets to form the top job in the European Commission. So Ursula von der Leyen is running again, and she is from the biggest group in the European Parliament, the EPP. Now, they do look like they're on track again to remain the biggest group in the European Parliament. However, they are effectively depending on a coalition at the moment, and it looks like their coalition partners, if you like, won't do as well. So she may have to depend on the votes of more right-wing parties, and that's where it's getting difficult for her. And that's why we've been seeing her over the last few months kind of keeping up the lines of communications with Giorgia Meloni. She came in and is ruling, you know, she's leading the most right-wing government in Italy in decades, but has been a bit more softly in approach when she is here in Brussels than people had been expected. So we have seen her, for example, initiate some agreements with von der Leyen on migration. But the problem for von der Leyen is that other groups, the more centrist and left-wing groups that support her now, have threatened that if she looks like she's getting too close to the right-wing element, they won't give her vote. So von der Leyen needs to get a simple majority. She needs to get 361 votes of the European Parliament to back her for European Commission President. And she only won it by 9 votes the last time around. So it's going to be a numbers game. When these results come in next week and we've got the the 720 MEPs, you know, Ursula von der Leyen and the EPP would be doing the math, saying, look, do we have enough coalition numbers to make coalition with the S&D and Renew, which are the kind of more moderate parties, or maybe we don't. And then we're going to have to do some kind of a deal with a more right-wing group. But will that mean we lose support elsewhere? So it's going to be a very, very interesting reconfiguration of the parliament. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, will von der Leyen be punished maybe from these more centrist parties who don't like the fact that she's reaching out to the right wing in this way.
And she really is reaching out to Giorgia Meloni. I mean, she's visited Italy a number of times, hasn't she, to discuss some of the issues that they're facing there. And that has really upset the centrist and leftist parties.
It has. And you know, as Graeme was saying there, I mean, it's a numbers game. And Italy is one of the biggest countries in the EU. So Meloni is going to, you know, have more power than those smaller countries. So she has. But what's been interesting is that Le Pen as well and France has also been, you know, reaching out to Meloni saying, well, maybe we could do a deal together in the parliament and form a kind of bigger right wing group in the European Parliament. So I think for von der Leyen, I think her von der Leyen and her people, I mean, I think their prerogative is to maybe try to recreate the coalition they have now, where the centre left parties, the S&D, they're called, and Renew Europe, that they support her candidacy. But what's going to happen is if she doesn't have enough votes, and some people within those groups might defect. So not every MEP who gets elected might vote for her in that group. It's how far she's willing to go. So what she's doing is she's doing a classic politician move in that she's keeping her options open. Mm. But the very fact that she's even opened the door, hasn't ruled out doing business with Meloni, has already caused some people to kind of warn her she may be going too far on this. And by doing that, she can't count on their votes.
It's fascinating, isn't it, Graeme? Because Giorgia Meloni now could well be the kingmaker after this election on Friday.
Yeah, that's the other thing with, you know, Germany's ruling party and France's ruling party losing votes. They're in the Socialists and Democrats and Renew, respectively. So they weaken, losing votes to far-right parties weakens their influence and their ability to get von der Leyen over the line. So it is really all to play for, and it's a very, very narrow way she has to walk. As Suzanne said, she can't alienate the Socialists and the Greens too much by caving into far-right demands, including from Meloni, for harsh anti-migration measures and anti-climate justice measures. So she can look to the left, to the Greens, but that's not the way that European politics is trending. Mm-hmm. With the switch to the right, she's going to have a very hard time, you know, really keeping those votes on the left happy at all. And again, as Suzanne said, there's very little parliamentary discipline in the European groupings. And so a lot of people weren't going to vote for her anyway, but now they really will defect and vote for anybody else.
All right, let's take a look now at Poland, because Donald Tusk there is a prime minister. Many people will recognize his name, of course. Will you remind us again of who he is, Graeme?
Well, Donald Tusk is another leader who's really taken advantage of this sort of weakening of France and Germany at European level. He was an anti-social, anti-communist dissident as a student. He was prime minister of Poland till 2014, and then he becomes president of the European Commission, and then president of the European People's Party. So he's the consummate EU insider. But he's returned as prime minister of Poland, having a narrow victory over the Law and Justice Party, which had really transformed Poland into an increasingly illiberal, socially conservative, and even authoritarian state with serious inroads into judicial independence and media freedom. So he's battling a lot of things on the home front, even as he takes a bigger role on the European stage.
So why then is Poland such an important country in these elections?
It's a very big country. Again, it's the motor of the region. The economy is doing very well. It has a lot of complex tensions in the general neighborhood with its neighboring European countries and with Ukraine. Polish policy, it's right on the front line of Ukraine, and it's taken in millions of Ukrainian refugees. But at the same time, its farmers are not completely happy with the flow of Ukrainian goods into Poland. So what you're finding in Poland right now with Tusk is he was expected to reverse the Law and Justice changes quickly. And that's proved very, very difficult. There's huge amounts of barriers to getting rid of those judges appointed incorrectly, accordingly to the European Union itself, by the Law and Justice Party. The Law and Justice Party can still controls the presidency, which is awkward. And they haven't gone away in the sense that they're still on 30%. So both Tusk and Law and Justice are on about 30% in these upcoming European elections. And Tusk has had to find himself opposing big European initiatives as a way of keeping everything on everyone on side in Poland itself, including the migration pact and the Green Deal.
So, Suzanne, when it comes to Poland, how do you rate their importance in all of this?
Yeah, I think it's a numbers game again. That's the first thing to say. They have 52 members of the European Parliament, so quite a sizable chunk. I think what's interesting in Poland that they've traditionally had a pretty low turnout in European Parliament elections, like down as far as 20-30%. And there could be a sense of election fatigue there because they had that big general election back in the autumn. Then they had local elections in April. So I think turnout, that's one of the things that Tusk's party are worried about, that their core supporters won't turn out. And they're very much casting it as a them and us. It's a very polarised political climate in Poland. So the Tusk party that's in power is trying to say, you know, this is a vote for Europe. And if, you know, if our supporters don't get out and vote for us, a lot of them are in the cities, well, then Law and Justice, the more right-wing party with their anti-European agenda, are going to thrive in this election. That's kind of their strategy, rather than bringing any more kind of active or positive moment, you know, issues to the fore. That's what they're banking on, that polarisation will help get their supporters out.
Well, Graham described him, Donald Tusk, as the ultimate EU insider, but he has found himself in a position where he's had to push back against things like the Nature Restoration Law, the Migration Pact, EU institutional reform. That can't be a happy place for him to be, Suzanne.
Absolutely. So what he's trying to do is it's tread a very fine line here, particularly on the climate. I mean, I think it's fair to say, without generalising too much, that the countries in Eastern Europe, they were always the most resistant, and I am generalising a bit, but to the Green Deal, because they have such a heavy, say, coal industry, for example. And so that was always an issue for some of those countries. And of course, he was able to argue cleverly, well, hang on, the Green Deal was agreed when we weren't in power, when the Law and Justice Party were in power. So they actually signed off on the new Green Deal. So, you know, don't blame us. So that's quite a good argument there. But he is a crucial figure in that he was the head of the European Council here. People might remember him during the Brexit talks. He held the job that Charles Michel held now. So there's a lot of speculation that when the top jobs are going to be divvied out, which will be the weeks after the election, we'll see about the makeup of the parliament and whether von der Leyen gets the commission job. At that point, there will also be conversation about who gets the European Council job. They'll be all done together. And the sense here in Brussels that he is going to take a big role behind the scenes there. He is a member, his party is a member of the EPP, von der Leyen's group as well. And because he has experience as the European Council president, he is going to be playing a role there. Because one thing that the Central and East European countries have been arguing for a long time is that they don't get a fair representation around the EU when it comes to top jobs. You know, France, Luxembourg, Belgium, they get these jobs, and why don't the Europeans in the East get one? So Tusk himself was the only big example you can point to who got a big job at the EU. And they're saying, you know, it's about time they did. So he will be an important voice there when those jobs are being divvied out now in the next few weeks and months.
So what might that mean if we have a louder voice from those countries, Graham, in the East of the Bloc?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of going slow on the Nature Restoration Law and other climate action, because these are very agricultural countries, especially Poland and so forth. We're going to see a lot of one-on-one or trilateral work by Donald Tusk. He's just revived an interesting thing called the Weimar Triangle, which is a specific alliance between France, Germany, and Poland, which has been dormant for ages. So where he's trying to rally the French and German sort of combination to play a more significant role. We might see, again, a lot of people are tipping Kaja Kallas, who's the Prime Minister of Estonia, for maybe the High Representative on foreign affairs, external affairs, for the European Commission, because she has really shown herself very adept at responding to the invasion of Ukraine. And despite some domestic scandals, She still seems to be in the line. And so we might see a greater representation at the very top jobs for people from Eastern Europe, as Suzanne says. Mm-hmm. It's all comes down to who's the president of the commission, though, because, you know, it's Ursula von der Leyen. She's going to have a lot of debts to repay, and it's going to be very difficult to make everybody happy.
Well, we have seen her resiling somewhat from the Green Deal. We have the pressure on the nature restoration law. I mean, how concerned are you about climate action now, even if Ursula von der Leyen is back in that position, Graham?
I think I'm incredibly concerned. I mean, across Europe, you're seeing a number of farmer-led movements very often, or movements led by parties on the right which never believed in climate change in the first place, who are pushing back and are getting a lot of electoral successes. We saw it in the Netherlands, but we're going to see it in other places. Even though a lot of these politicians are very inexperienced, and it shows, they are starting to form a coalition across Europe between countries, which could be a very, very effective force in the new parliament. Again, what's really exciting about these elections is the Greens seem to be holding up. So if we have a very large Green bloc and they can extort a deal out of Ursula von der Leyen, you know, we could see a shoring up of the Green agenda. I wouldn't put money on it, but okay. But that, you know, there's a lot of pressure to do nothing about the climate right now.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. Graham Finlay from UCD and Suzanne Lynch from Politico. Back after this quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.